Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today we'll meet two women from Africa who reflect the spirit of giving in a very special way. Well aware of the subservient role of women in sub-Saharan Africa, they are working here to help women there launch a new economy in which they can play a bigger role. They formed a St. Louis company called Expedition Sub-Sahara. It sells handmade jewelry, bags, and home goods made by women in Senegal, Morocco, and Nigeria, where they are largely marginalized. Profits will be used to fund trade schools for women. Joining me in studio are Sophie Seck, a native of Senegal. She lives in St. Louis and is a wedding photographer. Rosabel Komagisha is a native of Uganda, a former St. Louis resident, and now a high school teacher in Kentucky. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us. Great to have you.
Thank you for having us.
I hope you're having a wonderful holiday season.
We are. I hope you do the same.
Sophie, let me begin with you. How did you two connect?
We met at, I always say we met at UMSL, but actually I met her college roommate at UMSL, and her roommate and I were friends, and through her roommate we became friends.
And a friendship for how long?
I would say about 8 years now. I lose track of time. I feel like time stopped in 2010. But, yeah, so about 8 years now. And we were both going to UMSL. I was doing my master's, and you were finishing up your undergrad.
Yes.
And so we connected when I was living in St. Louis. And then this summer, 2017 is not over yet.
Not yet.
we met again, and that's when Sub-Sahara started. But before that, I moved to Washington. I left St. Louis in 2015. So I'd been out of St. Louis for about 2 years when I came back to visit and met up with Sophie again. And yeah.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
When did you leave your native country?
Uganda?
Yeah.
I actually left Uganda when I was, I think it was 11 or 12. And my dad worked for the UN. Yeah. So we moved to Vienna, Austria, where the headquarters were. And then he asked me where I wanted to go to college. And I was like, the U.S., because I'd been watching a lot of MTV, and it seemed really cool. So I came here in 2002 in the United States.
And Sophie, when did you come to this country?
I came here about 14 or 13 years ago. When I was very young, my parents got a divorce. And in Senegal, a lot of women, I don't want to say most women, don't have a formal education because it's kind of old school where women stay in the home and take care of the children. So, again, when I was very young, my parents got a divorce, and my mom didn't have a formal education. And she really wanted me to have a formal education because she didn't want me to fall into the trap where she did, where she got a divorce and then she had nothing. She was left in the street. She had nothing to take care of herself, and she had us. So she would sit there. She would put a table out in the streets and make things, because a lot of the women there also, their moms give them these not formal but beautiful skill sets, like making things. Anything you can make with their hand, pretty much any African woman who was born and raised there can make. And so she would sit there and make things. And she had a dream of me coming to the States and getting a college education here. And for years she did this until she got to the point where she could send me here. And that's what she did. So I've been here for about 14 years. I went to McClure High School and then UMSL. And then I started Sophie Seck Photography.
You've been here long enough to know that you've got to mention what high school you went to.
I love McClure High School. It was good to me.
You know, I don't want to get too far ahead of our story here, but it just occurs to me as you're talking about your mother and making things, and that's what a lot of women do.
Mm-hmm.
We hear a lot about that in this country, about people in sub-Saharan Africa, third world countries. Mm-hmm. The women have the greater entrepreneurial spirit than the men do. What is going on with that?
Well, not to speak for all of sub-Saharan Africa.
Of course.
But I believe that it is – a lot of those cultures are cultures where a lot of skills are passed down from mother to mother, right? Mm. From mother to daughter, right? So it's – their culture, especially in Senegal, like I'm my tribal line is Wolof. So in my culture, it is my mother's job, quote-unquote – to teach me how to do anything that I can that can keep me sustained, that can sustain me in my future, right? My mom believed that education would do that, so she did what she had to do to bring me here. But the women who can't do that, they can't bring their children outside of Senegal, they teach them things. They teach them how to sew. They teach them how to weave. They teach them how to talk to people so that, to sell, you know, so that when you don't have anything, the only thing you can really do is figure out how to make something and sell it and trade it so that you can build something for your own, for yourself. And I believe the sub-Saharan Africans, all Africans, are the best hustlers in the world because when you come from nothing, you have to hustle to get anything.
Yeah, and I wanted to add that when you were talking about why is it that the women are the ones who are like spearheading developing the communities, and I have a theory based on, I'm a social studies teacher, so I love history, and if you look at how Africa has modernized, the roles have changed. Men were responsible for going out there and doing the hunting and protecting their communities because they could physically could. And we've modernized, and the roles of the men have gone away. The roles of the women have remained the same because they still need to bring the food, bear the children, and take care of them. So somehow an irresponsibility has developed among the men where they have not transitioned and they've not taken on the new roles, but the women's roles have remained sort of similar. We've mentioned this quote so many times by Nicholas Kristof about how when you give women money in the developing world, they end up educating children, spending it on health and food. Men just like squander the money. And like going back to what I was saying, I think it's just these roles. The men have not acquired the new modernized roles, while women's roles have remained similar. And that's how we end up with women taking most of the responsibility.
It sounds like you're making a case that the future, the economic future in many parts of Africa are dependent on women, or will be.
Yes, I think so right now. I think men are going to catch up.
But the future is definitely female.
Women listening to this program are loving this conversation. I'm going to tell you.
There are statistics to support what we're saying. So,
did you want to add something? So I thought you were about to say.
Well, I also, within my own family, why are women the ones in sub-Saharan Africa being everything to everybody? Within my own family, it's so clear. My parents got a divorce, and although my father had the job and the money, my mother had to take me and then figure out a way to put a roof over our head, feed us, and also sustain a family. So she had to be everything to all of us. And while my dad went and partied. So I believe that that's been the culture for a lot of sub-Saharan countries where the women had to be the everything for everybody.
Let's get specific about what you're doing specifically to try to change that. Expedition Sub-Sahara.
Yes.
What is that all about? I gave a sense of it, I think, in the introduction, but not a complete one.
So originally it was my idea, and I started with the idea of how can I help the people back home. I came to St. Louis, and St. Louis has been good to me. I have a public education, actually. I went to, like I said, McClure, and I got amazing teachers, teachers who would stay after and take care of me, teachers who I literally, they were my mom and dad for all hours because they would stay until 7, 8, 9, helping me understand the language, helping me understand the culture, helping me assimilate into American society. And because of them, I was able to go into university and then later on start my business and have worked 8 years as a wedding photographer. And so I wanted to do something that connected our cultures, but also have a way to give back to where I came from, because, again, my mom sent me here for education. So why did we have to leave
what we know, our culture, our language, yeah. everything. And it's hard for a kid to assimilate into American society. So how can I connect that? So it was an idea that for years I was just thinking, how can I connect these two things? And it always went back to, I have to go back home and I have to start something that helps the women back home. It's not okay that they are the everything for everybody. But there was a missing link. I didn't know what it was until we sat down for brunch, and for hours, 5 hours that day,
6 hours,
we just sat and talked about all of the connections, all the cultural connections, how we need to do something for the women back home. But we also wanted to connect cultures, because the connecting cultures part is incredibly important in today's very tense racial I don't know. What's the word?
I would say climate. Political.
Yes.
Climate. Yeah.
Climate.
Yeah.
So then as we spoke, we realized that this wasn't a job for one woman. This was a job for two. And that together we could do anything.
We also liked the idea of two African women collaborating. Collaboration, I think, is great, especially in our society today. I think we push individualism so much. And collaborating is whenever we can show that we're doing that is great. But going back to education, so Expedition Sub-Sahara, the way we could lift the communities in Africa was through education, and specifically through starting on a small scale. I've always seen that there are two ways that we develop a community or a country, and either it's top-down or bottom-down. They can be happening at the same time. Most, you know, top down is the government putting things, regulations into place. And bottom up is the people, communities, taking it upon them to change something. And so by building a school in a community that needs it in sub-Saharan Africa, it's not just a school. It's going to be a center where people who don't know how to read and write can come. We're starting with a secondary school for girls, and then at that secondary school, we'll have places for people in the community to come and develop skills that they need. And we chose education because access to education for girls specifically is much lower. When we were doing our research, we found that while we'll have the same amount of girls and boys, especially in Senegal, starting out in primary school, by the time they get to secondary school, we've dropped to like 39% of the girls who started out. Literacy rates are very low. There is a lot of child marriage. And then the girls have to take on that responsibility of supporting the family. Yeah. So we wanted to start with the women, you know, going back to also the women taking on being more responsible than men. So we need to lift them from the very beginning.
It takes money, of course.
Of course.
And other resources to build a school. And we'll talk about how those funds are generated in just a moment. I have to take a break already. We are talking with Sophie Seck and Rosebel Kombajisha, co-founders of Expedition Sub-Sahara. And we'll have more in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation with Sophie Seck and Rosebel Kombajisha, the co-founders of Expedition Sub-Sahara. Sophie, let me come back to you as much as this was your idea. How does it work? Obviously, you're taking goods from Africa and selling them here. Is that tell us how the commercial part of this works.
Yes. So there are two parts of this. There's the commercial where we are taking goods from Africa, and what we want to do is find communities within sub-Saharan Africa and connect with those communities so that we know that the money that we are giving them are actually going into those communities. And then also what we also want to do, and then 15% of all of our profits goes into a fund, and that's the Sub-Saharan Fund. And all of that goes into building the school once we're at that level.
So the goods that are made by women in sub-Saharan Africa,
yes,
come to St. Louis, or come to this country.
Yes,
you sell them, and you keep 15% of the profits for funding schools and construction in those countries.
Yes.
Where are you now in this whole project?
I would say we are at the very beginning as far as raising funds. I don't know if you're aware of this, we're doing a Kickstarter, and we set our goal for $75,000, and we got to $29,800. Now, the thing is with Kickstarter, if you don't get the full amount, it all goes back. So that we concluded that about 2 weeks ago, and so what we have done now is we're applying for grants. And then we are still fundraising on the big picture project. One of our friends has agreed to continue fundraising for us on her website, and then continuing to sell our baskets. I would say in about a year, we'll be ready to buy the land where the school is going to go.
Let me just clarify the big picture project. This is something separate, although you have kind of linked up. You're collaborating on raising funds.
Yes, yes.
The Big Picture Project is a program whereby cameras are distributed to various places, encouraging people to take pictures of what's around them to show what life is like wherever that happens to be.
Yeah.
Well, so Karen Dooley, who runs it, it's a nonprofit, and she basically saw that our Kickstarter was coming to an end and that we weren't going to get any of the funding that we raised during that time. And she stepped in and she said, hey, we wholeheartedly believe in what you're doing. We think that you can build this school, and we want to help you however we can. What if we host a fundraiser for you? So it is not part of Expedition Sub-Sahara, but she's hosting a fundraiser for us through her nonprofit, and very graciously of her, and so that we can continue our fundraising, and hopefully all of the people from the Kickstarter could move on to the Big Picture project. That was the original idea.
Yeah. Rosebud, did I describe the Big Picture Project accurately as to what they do?
Yes, yes, yeah. You did. And I also like that the Big Picture Project is a St. Louis thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a long time, I didn't realize it was St. Louis because of how popular it is. We are getting a lot of help from our local St. Louis people. Lulu's hosted a yoga for us a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Then we had another workshop, right before Christmas, a few days before Christmas, we sold at the Vino Gallery. We had set up there a shop to sell some of our things. So we are collaborating with many St. Louis people, and have been overwhelmed with how supportive people have been. Throughout this process, what we've learned is if you have like the right motivation and you have the dream that is going to build a community, people will rise up to support you. Mm-hmm. And we're continuing with the fundraising. I would say that it's not a matter of are we going to do this? It's when are we going to do this? Mm-hmm. And so the more baskets we sell, the more money we can put into that fund, and the more fundraising events we have, the more money we can put into that fund. So we are planning another big fundraising event on Valentine's Day, and we're still putting that together. So keep your ear out and keep coming to our website. We can give you more information about that.
We'll put links to these websites on ours as well, needless to say. Where are these goods from Africa being sold? Do you have regular vendors who sell them for you?
So eventually we want to get to that point. Right now they're being sold online at our website and on Etsy. We have an Etsy shop, but mostly online. We have, like she said, we've had a couple of pop-up shops. And as she just said, we've had an overwhelming amount of support from our St. Louis businesses. Might I add, women-owned businesses.
Yeah.
our community has been so strong, and we are so thankful to them. Every single time we say we want to do this, a business pops up and says, let us help you. How can we help you do this? And it's been incredible. So right now, mostly online, but throughout 2018, we want to do as many pop-up shops. We want to get our products into local businesses and distributed that way. And we just want Expedition Sub-Sahara to be a St. Louis brand as much as it is a you know, sub-Saharan brand.
But it is possible for people through the online commerce to people outside of St. Louis can become involved in buying these things.
Yes, well, of course. They have. Yes. We've had a very good winter, the holiday season. I did a post on Pantsuit Nation, which is a feminist group, and we had an overwhelming they brought out our entire site, and it went all over across America, and same thing happened.
You should talk about those two ladies who have been so helpful. So it hasn't just been St. Louis local businesses that have been so supportive, but online, when you Sophie put that story up on Pantsuit Nation, we had a couple of ladies who just advocated us. Mind you, we didn't know who they were. And they started tweeting about us and answering questions about our website. So just, you know, the support has been overwhelming.
Do you want to mention their name?
Yes, Joanne. So it hasn't just been about tweeting and mentioning. They literally stopped what they were doing and said, we're going to, they developed a plan.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And sent it to us and said, what do you think of this? And we're going to do this, this, this. We're going to help you get to your Kickstarter. And although we didn't get to the Kickstarter goal, the amount of just support that came from that, there's no way we would have sold out of our online shop twice this winter.
What sort of volume are we talking about in terms of the amount of you keep mentioning baskets.
Yes.
It's more than baskets.
Oh, yes. We say baskets. That's where our heart is.
Yeah.
It's baskets and home goods and jewelry.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we started out with just baskets and jewelry, and then we have expanded to the home goods, but we don't want to become too big too quickly because, mind you, it's the two of us managing this, and our objective is to fund schools, fund education. So when you say how much are we talking about, we're talking about should we say like maybe 30 sales a day, which may not seem like a lot, but if you remember, it's Sophie and I who have to package it, ship it.
That's a lot.
And then we have, we have to bring, we have to bring those things from sub-Saharan Africa. We have to go through customs. We had our first customs glitch, and we could just see that the items were sitting there, and we were not getting them, and customers were waiting. So, you know, it can be overwhelming. We are learning so much through this process.
What's the price range of the goods?
The price at anywhere from, I would say, 30 to about 100. Mm-hmm. The average, there really isn't an average. That's that's the range.
How about payment to the people who made the baskets and the other things?
Yes.
How does that work?
So it's very important to us. Mm-hmm. I personally have a problem with the word fair wage because what's fair to the person buying it is not fair to the person selling it. Mm-hmm. It takes 16 hours to make a small basket. So those women have to sit there for 16 hours to make one small basket. If you go up to someone who's poor and you say, here's a dollar, will you give me that basket? Most likely they're going to say, yes, here's the basket. That's not fair. They can't feed their families with that dollar. So we have two people in Senegal who are helping us. One with the education, finding locations, helping us with the government, trying to figure out exactly what we can and can't do. And we have another one, my aunt, who helps us find the communities where we can get our goods. And it's important to us to pay them a wage in which they can sustain their families, because that's fair. And we want to make sure that it's not just a take, but a give and a take. And when we bring these baskets and sell them, the money not only goes back to those communities on an educational level, but on an everyday, I can have light, and I can feed my family level.
And Sophie's aunt actually goes out there, and so it's not one person, because it takes about, I would say, 14 hours to make one of our average-sized baskets, obviously not done in one sitting. And so in order for us to get the amount that we need, Sophie's aunt has to go to different people to procure them. Sometimes we will only have, like, one thing, like that one color, that one style, and then other times we'll be able to find things that are the same, that we can sell the same of to many different people. So that's why it's so difficult for us to be able to give people the same. We've had people come back and say, oh, I really like that. Can I have another one? And we have to say, no, I'm sorry, I only had one. And
everyone is one of a kind.
Yeah,
I mm-hmm. take it. Mm-hmm. Sophie, you used the word the phrase fair wage a moment ago. Is that like fair trade? I mean, there is a movement in many parts of the world,
yes.
A fair trade movement. Is that what you're talking about?
Fair trade, fair wage. I just have a problem with the word fair because I believe I came from these places. I see what these women are being paid, and I see what it's being labeled as fair. Mm-hmm. And I personally don't think that it is fair, because if you're sitting there making these baskets and jewelry for hours and hours and hours, and you can't feed your family, and there is nothing fair about that wage. Mm-hmm. There's nothing fair about any of it. So it's just a personal thing. So it's just important to us as a company to make sure that what we're paying is not fair wage. It is fair to them. It is something they can sustain their families with.
On the other hand, the whole fair trade movement has done a lot for women in the parts of the world that we're talking about.
And I'm not knocking that at all. Yeah. I'm just saying my personal opinion on the word fair.
Sometimes fair doesn't mean fair wage. But another thing that I wanted to add, I keep forgetting to add, is eventually we would like to have people who are working specifically for Expedition Sub-Sahara. When that way we can have them just working specifically for the company, and they can sustain their lives through that. Mm-hmm. We're not buying enough to have people doing this, women doing this as their full-time job. Mm-hmm. This is something they do along with something else. So when we get there, we will want to have a specific people working for Expedition Sub-Sahara and being able to sustain their lives through working for us in that way.
Are these items that you're receiving coming only from the three countries I mentioned, Morocco, Senegal, and Nigeria?
No, we have contacts from all over. We just got one from Madagascar, which has been amazing. I just like the word Madagascar.
And we get some from Uganda.
Morocco.
Ghana. Mm-hmm. But mostly from Senegal, and we say Uganda because I'm Ugandan, she's Senegalese, and we want to remain, have that contact where we know who we're getting these things from. So it's easier to do that from our home countries. Again, like we're in the beginning. We have, like, our big dream is we could have something from each sub-Saharan country. Mm-hmm. But we also have to remember, what can we manage and how can we procure them?
How can we grow sustainably?
Yeah.
Where is the first school going to be? Is that going to be in Senegal, or
Yeah. It's going to be in Senegal. We have worked so hard trying to figure out the logistics of how can we do this. Mm-hmm. So $1,000 gets a girl into Senegal education for an entire year, $1,000. Mm-hmm. And it's our goal to grow this company to the point where not only can we build the school, because building the school is more crowdsourcing. We're going to do 1 million fundraisers this year, and that's how we're planning on building the school. Mm-hmm. But keeping it sustained and keeping it going for years and generations is going to be up to this company to be able to put that into the school. Mm-hmm. So our goal is to be able to educate 100 women per school to start. And, you know, that's a big goal. So the first one's going to be in Senegal, in Fas, actually, a city named Fas. And then we will continue. But right now, the goal line right now is Senegal.
Well, aside from 100 students per school, what is the long-range objective? What would you like to see come out of this over a period of time?
Long-range is to have a school in... Right now we're thinking Senegal and Uganda, but we would like to have them across sub-Saharan Africa. And going back to what pushed us to do this, you know, I always go back to, like, I didn't leave Africa because of economic reasons, but many, many people leave Africa because of that. And also changing that narrative of Africa is this place without opportunity, it's poor – and wanting to change our communities so that people stay in Africa and people are proud of it, and the outside world is no longer looking at Africa like people who can't help themselves. So how do we change that? We change that by starting at the community level. And I think education is the first step, but we don't even know. We may get into employment, which is what I was talking about earlier. So we want Expedition Sub-Sahara to be this place where we change the narrative about Africa. And we're studying one school at a time. Mm-hmm. But eventually we want to be all over in education, employing women, changing communities, and helping Africans realize that they don't need to leave.
Education involving more than just math and the ABCs, but also trade skills and that sort of thing, I assume.
Yeah.
1 minute left, and Sophie, it'll have to be quick, but any opposition from the politicians in the countries that you're working through?
Not from Senegal so far. The thing about Senegal is that although it's an old school country, there are actually government aid trying to help some of these women. There's a program in which they take the women they'll rent a house and they'll take the women into these houses and they'll teach them skills. The problem is they're teaching them low level skills, like soap making, that can't keep them sustained. So we're actually hoping to work with the government and create something bigger and teach these women skills that they can go out and start their own businesses and create their own future.
You're taking on a big task. Congratulations to both of you for what you're trying to do, and best wishes for being successful at it.
Thank you so much.
The information about your organization and others that we've talked about on our website at sdopublicradio.org. Sophie Sack and Rosebel Komajisha, co-founders of Exhibition Sub-Sahara, thank you so much for being with us again. Congratulations and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Don.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.